You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, January 26, 2021. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Mitch McConnell relents. Power share goes forward. The Senate can theoretically now operate. Meanwhile, Joe Manchin, Kristen Sinema, they vow not to kill the filibuster. But what about maim it? Biden claims he is open to COVID relief negotiations. Still claims that time is of the essence. And meanwhile, speaking of urgency, the end of 2020 sees the sharpest rise in U.S. poverty rate in 50 years. Senate's going to be busy in a couple of weeks as Leahy to preside over the impeachment hearings as Donald Trump promises Republican senators not to start a third party as long as they remember who their buddy is. Pfizer now wants credit and, more importantly, money for the typical overages in vaccination vials. Janet Yellen confirmed as the first female Treasury Secretary in the history of the United States. Billions of dollars essentially stolen from the California unemployment funds. Canadian lawmakers vote to label the Proud Boys a terror organization. And lastly, locked away, the internet entrepreneur and former liberal Democrat Brandon Straka arrested for his participation in the Capitol insurrection. All this and more on today's program. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the program. We should tell you right up front, we're having some issues with our internet today. Apparently, it's system-wide, so forgive us if we have any interruptions. This is what it's like in the age of COVID, where everything is done more or less remotely, but not so remotely today is Emma Viglin. She is here, of course. Partitioned in yes. Our studio, but
not remote, but distanced.
Indeed. Emma, good to see you.
Good to see you too.
Thank you.
As it is every day.
Oh, that's very kind.
Yeah.
That's very kind.
Sure. Generous, I'd say.
So, some news this morning, and of course, on some level, this should have never been a drama in the first place.
Agreed.
The Democrats won the Senate. Because the vice president functions as a tie-breaking vote when the Senate is tied, as it is now, at 50-50. And as such, Chuck Schumer is the Senate leader. There is no controversy over that. Mitch McConnell was essentially leading a filibuster of the organizing rules that are changed at the beginning of every new session of the Senate, happens also in the House, and insisted that the new rules, which would have installed Democrats at the head of all the committees, that the new rules would have included a promise or vow or at least a prohibition against getting rid of the filibuster or presumably changing it in any way. And Chuck Schumer said, no, we're not going to do that. We have a model for power sharing from the early 2000s where the Senate was similarly at a 50-50 split. And we're going to follow those. Thank you very much. In fact, here is Chuck Schumer last night on the Rachel Maddow program being asked about the filibuster rule. And here's Chuck Schumer. Here's Chuck Schumer's response.
Well, let me ask you about the filibuster. There is definitely a diversity of opinion within your caucus on that. Senator Sinema, Senator Manchin have, for example, expressed reservations about getting rid of that. But lots of other senators and lots of people who have are strong stakeholders within the Democratic Party say that there's too much to get done right now to let that get in the way. And there's no reason to expect that any Republicans in any significant numbers, let alone 10 of them, will cross the line on anything. Where do you stand?
The caucus is united with a belief that I have. We must get big, strong, bold things done. That's a bottom line. If we don't, I worry about the future of this democracy. If people continue to be disillusioned that this government can't do a thing to make their lives better at a time when so many are angry, so many are sour, so many think they don't have a chance to get ahead, I worry about the future. So we have to get things done. That's point one. Point two, we will not let Mitch McConnell dictate to us what we will do and not do. Period. And these first 5 days have shown that. And as I said, my caucus is totally united from one end to the other that we're not letting him go forward. Our hope is now we have tools that we can use. Reconciliation. We can get a lot of the COVID bill done with reconciliation. And that's something we certainly will use if they try to block this immediate COVID bill. We can even use reconciliation for a much broader a proposal, Biden's Build It Back Better, which obviously would be modified and changed. So we have some tools we can use right now and will not hesitate to use them if Republicans continue to just block. As for other issues, what we're going to do is we are united in the view we need to bring change. We are united in the view McConnell is not going to dictate what this Senate does. And we will come together as a caucus and figure it out. But I can assure you, we will bring real change here, real dramatic change. We have no choice.
So there it is. I mean, Chuck Schumer speaking as forcefully, I think, as I've seen him do in quite some time. Now, of course, he's the thin majority leader. And
notice how he said, my caucus is united, that we need big structural change, not united behind any sort of filibuster reform, which I think is troubling for my in my perspective.
Well, the bottom line is you cannot get the former without the latter.
Agreed.
And we heard yesterday, around the same time that Chuck Schumer was saying those things, maybe prior, not particularly new, but it was a very explicit vow, if you will, from Joe Manchin that, and he has previously stated this, Kristen Sinema has also stated this from Arizona, that they will not vote to kill the filibuster. Here is a quote from Kristen Sinema's press person. Spokeswoman for Sinema said on Monday, this is via the Washington Post, that she is, quote, against eliminating the filibuster, and she is not open to changing her mind about eliminating the filibuster.
Yeah, well, go on.
I was going to read Joe Manchin also says something similar in various interviews. He was asked if there's any scenario that would change his mind. And he replied, none whatsoever, that I will vote to get rid of the filibuster. I'm in the same place I've always been. Busting the filibuster under any conditions is wrong. Now, I think you can tell by the tone of my voice, I'm trying to put an italics around
because there
killing,
is a mini nuclear option.
Busting.
Right, right. Yeah.
Well, there are options that you can massage the filibuster. In other words, you could say, for instance, maybe we need we have certain thresholds to extend debate rather than to have it extended forever. So maybe it takes right now it takes you need 60 votes to pass a legislation. Maybe it would go down to 55 votes after 4 days of debate. Maybe it would go down to 50 after 10 days of debate. There are various proposals that have always been floated around for reform of the filibuster, and we simply don't know how dedicated Sinema and Manchin are to the filibuster in its current form. But it sounds, at least, like Chuck Schumer is going out on a little bit of a limb here to talk about how unified his caucus is. It certainly sounds like he believes, anyways, that he has the votes to deliver through reconciliation the $1.9 trillion package that Joe Biden has proposed.
Which is key.
Which is key, at least for immediate relief in this country. And by immediate now, if it was through reconciliation, we are probably looking at the beginning of the first couple of weeks of March. And
to me, I am immensely frustrated by not going to that option immediately so that relief comes quickly, because who could have guessed that Republicans would not join in this $1.9 trillion proposal when they had previously said, as a very united caucus beforehand, that they wouldn't go over the $900 billion one from before.
There is a, I don't know how else to put this, some type of mass psychological defect, or just some disingenuousness amongst at least some of these Democratic lawmakers. I mean, Ezra Klein wrote an interesting piece in the New York Times the other day, basically saying that the Obama administration era provides a very telling example and cautionary tale, which is you can dilly-dally around with this stuff for a long time. However, it's going to cost you both from a policy and from a political standpoint.
Especially when Joe Biden went on such a limb from a policy and political standpoint with these checks, which are already only going to be $1,400. That seems to be the case. I know that was the initial promise, but that's not what was said on the stump so clearly. And my prediction about filibuster reform, so now McConnell has agreed to this power-sharing dynamic based on, you know, they're not going to end the filibuster. That was with the hostage that he was holding. I think that Manchin and Sinema maybe gave him some assurances that they're also less committed to filibuster massaging than Schumer's trying to publicly state, because he's trying to appear as a progressive and strong leader, one, to get off on the right foot under Biden, and also to fend off any potential primary challenges in 2022.
Well, that's the other thing.
As Ocasio-Cortez flirts with it. Even if it's not genuine, she's flirting with it.
That's right. And that filing deadline isn't until the spring of 2021. So there is political pressure on Chuck Schumer to, at the very least, posture as someone who's going to be aggressive with the Republicans. I would also argue that there is... there's policy reasons for him to posture that way. And it's also conceivable, I guess we will know in a couple of months, whether that is posturing or if it's actually the case that he is going to or has the ability to whip his caucus in such a way that they will be able to pass these type of things. Now, Joe Biden has signaled that he is open to some wiggle room on that $1,400, as you alluded to, perhaps more in terms of, and the original $600 payment, and as well as the $1,200 check that happened at the beginning, I guess now almost 9 months ago, the first COVID relief bill, were essentially means tested for lack of a better term. There was a threshold into which you were eligible for these things. $75,000 was the $600 checks, although you get some was available up to $100,000. It's conceivable they would lower the threshold in this bill, but it's it remains to be seen.
But why is Biden prematurely making that concession when they could just go through reconciliation? Like, why put that out there? Because that gives a little crumb to conservative Democrats like Sinema and Manchin, who even in reconciliation may try to water that down.
It is there is a tick of negotiating against themselves. You know, you only as of this morning have Mitch McConnell essentially saying, yes, we're going to allow for the Senate to conduct business. And already Joe Biden's out there saying, I'm willing to negotiate away certain of these things. I mean, there's acting. I can understand the idea of trying to project a reasonableness to the American public. But at the end of the day, when we have
a
report out, well, I mean, it is the you can look at the you can look at the polls and see to what extent Democrats are interested in compromise, far more so than Republicans. But the other problem is that most of these people, most of these politicians have lived, have functioned, have worked with inside a, if not hermetically sealed bubble, certainly a fairly hermetically sealed bubble, where the sense that they're trying to do the country's business involves reaching across the aisle. I mean, listen to the way that some of these people in the Senate talk, that Joe Manchin's talking about, like, if you can't make a deal, you don't belong in the Senate. I got news for him. Was he around a couple of years ago? Has there been any type of bipartisan consensus on any major piece of legislation in decades? I mean, there were plenty of reporters who pointed this out in terms of, I guess it was, yes, the last one was the authorization for military force.
Funding the military, there's always bipartisan consensus, and all, of course, money to Israel as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, there is a series of these things, but they're in terms of, like, let's say domestically then. Well, maybe there might have been some domestic terror legislation. Maybe. But the point being is that this is a fantasy, and it is perpetuated by these folks in Washington, and at the behest of very few people. We have record-breaking poverty in the country right now. We have record-breaking new unemployment claims week after week after week after week, and to think that the overriding concern of the American public is consensus is absurd.
Pretty sure they'll put their concerns for consensus aside, even if that's the Democratic concern. You already have those people. The people that you need to win over, and the people you need to help too, you need to help everybody. The checks. That will be primary. That's what people will remember, not some vague notion of compromise. It's a fantasy land, as you say.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will talk about a little more about this and what Biden's saying. Well, let's just play this clip here of Joe Biden convinced that bipartisanship will help move the COVID bill through the Senate. Let's here he is from the White House yesterday.
In this pandemic, I'm confident they know we have to do something about figuring out how to get children back in school. And there's easy ways to deal with this. One, if you're anti-union, you can say it's all because of teachers. If you want to make a case, though, that it's complicated, you say, well, what do you have to do to make it safe to get in those schools? Now, we're going to have arguments. For example, I propose that we, because it was bipartisan, I thought it would increase the prospects of passage, the additional $1,400 in direct cash payment to folks. Well, there's legitimate reason for people to say, do you have the lines drawn the exact right way? Should it go to anybody making over X number of dollars or Y? I'm open to negotiate those things. That's all. I picked it because I thought it was rational, reasonable, and it had overwhelming bipartisan support in the House when it passed. But this is all a bit of a moving target. In terms of the precision with which this goes, you're asking about unity, 51 votes, bipartisan, et cetera. The other piece of this is that the one thing that gives me hope that we're not only going to sort of stay away from the ad hominem attacks on one another is that there is an overwhelming consensus among the major economists at home and in the world that the way to avoid a deeper recession moving in the direction of losing our competitive capacity is to spend money now, to from across the board. Every major institution has said, if we don't invest now, we're going to lose so much altitude in terms of our employment base and our economic growth, it's going to be harder to reestablish it.
That assumes that the Republicans care about people.
Well, I have two reactions. One of them is that. The first is, though, let me just say on a positive note, the idea that Joe Biden seems to be fully convinced that this is not a time for austerity is is a marked improvement over what we saw in the Obama administration back in 2000. Well, particularly in 2010. But there was not this full-throated. There was a panic in terms of bailing out the banks. But you did not hear a sort of like such a confident expression of the need to spend when you're in an economic crisis. That is encouraging. What is not encouraging is what was your first reaction, because we know the Republicans throughout the Obama administration did everything in their power to slow the economic recovery. They simply did. And they obstructed at every turn, and they were pushing austerity. It's true that the Obama administration was too by 2010, but I hope that he's play acting a little bit.
Well, that would ignore his entire history as a politician. Yes, there is growth in that area, so that's the one positive that you can take away from this, but. I mean, it's because of the congeniality, the friendship, the nature of the Senate, whatever it may be, the constant underestimation of what Republicans will go to, the lengths that they will go to for political victories. They blocked Obama because they were not as concerned with the economy returning as long as the banks were saved and the industries that donated to them were saved as well. I mean, it's why they're not interested in growing the green economy. They're way more interested in propping up their oil donors than they are in making the American economy more robust, because it's a fundamentally corrupt party that's trying to loot the government on behalf of wealthy people that give them money. So, like, that is the biggest part of this. And McConnell will obstruct and obstruct and try to make Biden's presidency a failure. And underestimating that tendency could be the pitfall of them. And look, there are some improvements with Biden, but there has to be an understanding of that dynamic, or
it's irrelevant.
It's irrelevant.
Yep. All right. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back and talk more about the upcoming impeachment. So, folks, today's program sponsored in part by Monk Pack. Look, everybody knows that you need to snack throughout the day. I personally do. But you want to try and eat snackily, or I should say healthily. You want your snacks to be healthy.
Sorry,
I guess you also want to try and eat snackily.
Nope.
Monk Pack, they make snacks that taste like they're your favorite sugary treats, but they have 1 gram of sugar or less. Monk Pack Keto Granola Bars contains 2 grams of net carbs. They're only 140 calories. They come in delicious flavors like coconut cocoa chip, maple pecan, peanut butter. For me, I got to say, I'm a I'm the coconut cocoa chip, and I like the peanut butter.
So coconut with chocolate? I'm glad we're in agreement on that.
Pecan, I just, I'm not there on a pecan. I mean, maple pecan's good, but I just not a, I can't get ever too excited about pecan. Anyway, these things are keto-friendly. They're gluten-free, they're grain-free, plant-based, and they're non-GMO. My kids love them. Again, this is one of those products where I feel like I can give my kids something that they like, and they're not eating garbage. And that, to me, is, I mean, I know that parents out there appreciate what I'm saying. That's like a win. As far as I'm concerned, I can disappoint my children in every other way. But if I'm keeping them fed and I'm not feeding them with garbage, then I'm done. As far as I'm concerned, like, success.
Nice.
I don't care how else they turn out. That's their problem. But if you're one of those people, too, who want to try and eat better, but, you know, during the course of the day, you need a snack, Monk Pack Keto Granola Bars. Try it for yourself. You'll see what I'm talking about. We have a special deal for our listeners. You get 20% off your first purchase of any Monk Pack product by visiting monkpack.com, entering our code Majority Report at checkout. And Monk Pack is so confident in their product, it's backed with 100% satisfaction guarantee. If you don't like it, for any reason whatsoever, they'll exchange the product or refund your money, whichever you prefer, to get started. So you can try different flavors if you want.
Nice.
To get started, just go to monkpack.com. That's M-U-N-K-P-A-C-K. Monkpack.com. Select any product. Then enter the code Majority Report. Check out. Save 20% off your purchase. Monk Pack. Delicious, nutritious food that you can count on. And we thank them for sponsoring this podcast. Also, another sponsor of today's program, longtime sponsor. This is actually an interesting Valentine's Day gift.
Ooh.
And you still have time, right? You got 2.5 weeks.
I don't have to do anything. I'm a woman.
All right. Suit yourself. Suit yourself. Although, I don't know.
No. I'll you know, make dinner or something.
I'm sort of psyched not to have to celebrate Valentine's Day, but that's not the point. Did you know the first Valentine's card was developed from Worcester, Massachusetts?
Oh.
Anyways, so what do you do for Valentine's Day? Oh, I don't know. I get chocolate, flowers, whatever it is. I get a better idea. Hunt a killer. What? Why would you do that for Valentine's Day? Well, first off, it is a murder mystery subscription box, and it is perhaps the most exciting date night you can do at home.
Oh, that's fun.
Hunt a Killer brings people together. It challenges them to decide to decode ciphers, to look at clues, solve puzzles. And this is what happens. They send you a box every... Oh, Matt can attest to this. So wait a second. So let me just tell you. They send you a box. You have documents in there. You get like a thumb drive. Maybe there's some audio clues. There's case files. And then you eliminate suspects. You figure out who the murderer is. Catch the case. You catch the killer. It's sort of like an escape room delivered right to your door. And you could also do it with people from socially distant. Hop on Zoom.
Nice.
Maybe grab a glass to drink, or it doesn't have to be alcoholic. You drink whatever you want. My case, every time I hit Zoom now, just have a little drink. Hunt a Killer, spoiler-free community, too, can give you some insights and stuff like this. So for me, it's not date night. I do it with my kid. I do with my daughter. It's the only thing that she really wants to have any involvement with me whatsoever. Every now and then she'll do a TikTok with me.
Oh my God, are you on her TikTok?
Well, I don't let her post. We just keep it for us.
Okay,
but,
gotcha.
But
this does sound nice and fun to do.
Yes, and the last one we did, I think you did this one too, Matt, right? With the
I'm still working my way through it. Yeah, but the theater.
Theater from the 1930s. It's like a cold case. And somebody sort of goes back in time to solve it. Not literally travel through time, but, you know, it's a cold case.
Yeah.
All right. So date night, right? I mean, this would be a great Valentine's Day gift.
Yeah, I got it because I hate board games and stuff like that. But, you know, it's a pandemic and you need stuff besides just movies to watch. So this was my offer. And it actually is really fun.
And I like escape room kind of stuff like that. So I feel like that would be really. Yeah.
It's exciting. And, you know, my daughter was just a big Law and Order fan. And so when I was like this, she was like, yes. And I was like, really? She's like, yes. And I was like, all right, good. And cool. It's actually been really fun. We set up a whole bulletin board with the string.
Ah.
Right now, you can go to huntthekiller.com/majority. Use the promo code MAJORITY to get 20% off your first box. Again, make sure to use code MAJORITY for a 20% discount. Check it out. Find out if you have what it takes to hunt a killer. Lastly, a message from a friend of show, Joshua Con Russell. He's been a guest on the program. He also listens to the program. He writes to me, I'd like to tell you about my friend Casey Harrell. He's a longtime environmental organizer, spent his life fighting and winning against the fossil fuel industry, and a true American activist hero. Most recently, he led a global campaign that successfully pressured BlackRock, the world's largest asset manager, to change course on climate. Last year, Casey was diagnosed with ALS, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease, not long after the birth of his daughter, Aya. Within 6 months, he was in constant pain, had to use a walker, and needs assistance with daily tasks. Knowing what ALS does and fearing what lies in store for him and his family has been a harrowing experience. Casey, however, is a resilient and focused person. This is his new campaign. He's determined to live a long life. He wants to help everyone suffering from ALS get the support and treatment they need. Of those diagnosed with ALS, half live less than 2.5 years, and only 10% live longer than 10 years. Casey's doing everything in his power to beat these odds, starting with slowing his progression, but he needs support to do it. I wanted to appeal to MR listeners to go to his GoFundMe, which listeners can search by find by searching GoFundMe.com for the name Support for Casey Harrell, H-A-R-R-E-L-L, and his family. We are 90% of the way of our to get to $250,000 goal. He's never sought the of people on the planet is something we should all aspire to. He helped the anti-sweatshop movement, United Students Against Sweatshops, and won the first big corporate campaign against Nike. Successfully pressured Facebook, Apple, and Google and other to move their data centers off of coal and commit to 100% renewable energy. Casey is one of the most strategic and impactful campaigners that most people have never heard of. He's a reminder that organizing works and that action is an antidote to despair. Thanks so much for listening. That's from Joshua Con Russell. We will put a link in the podcast description and our YouTube subscription and on our website to Casey's GoFundMe. But check that out if you have...
sending, you know, all of... So much love to Casey and his family.
Yep. And if you have a couple extra dollars, by all means. All right. Getting back into this, we have Mitch McConnell saying we can go forward with the Senate. We have Joe Biden saying in the clip that we just played earlier that that he is open to some fine tuning of his $1.9 trillion package, but it's got to get it done. He reiterated his commitment to the idea that we need to spend while the economy is sputtering and people are suffering. Here is Joe Biden talking about unity. And again, you know, I think, Emma, your point being that this notion of Senate comity, I want to make sure I don't say comedy, although I think they could be used interchangeably.
Yeah,
often.
Comic T, hard T.
This has marked his entire career, and so I think it makes sense to take him at his word about it. But we will really know whether or not there is a limit that from which he will depart and move forward without this concept of unity. But here he is in at this White House press conference, asked, like, can you describe to us what unity is? Because we are now only 20 days out from where at least almost a dozen Republican senators, never mind about 120 some odd Republican House members, basically helped to incite an insurrection in the Capitol building. Here's Joe Biden.
or any sort of number of, or perhaps it's 50 plus one or 50 plus two or 75%. So given that it is such a key part of your message and your promise, can you talk and reflect a little bit more about what is unity when you see it and as you define it?
Well, Annie, I think it makes up several of the issues, the points you made. One is unity requires you to take away, eliminate the vitriol. Make anything that you disagree with about the other person's personality or their lack of integrity or they're not decent legislators and the like. So we have to get rid of that. And I think that's already beginning to change, but God knows where things go, number one. Unity also is trying to reflect what the majority of the American people, Democrat, Republican, Independent, think is within the fulcrum of what needs to be done to make their lives and the lives of Americans better. For example, if you look at the data, and I'm not claiming the polling data to be exact, but if you look at the data, you have, I think it's, I hope I'm saying it gets correct. You may correct me if I get the number wrong. I think it's 57-58% of the American people, including Republicans, Democrats, and Independents, think that we have to do something about the COVID vaccine. We have to do something about making sure that people who are hurting badly, can't eat, don't have food, are in a position where they're about to be thrown out of their apartments, et cetera, being able to have an opportunity to get a job, that they all think we should be acting. We should be doing more. Unity also is trying to get at a minimum, if you pass a piece of legislation that breaks down on party lines, but it gets passed, it doesn't mean there wasn't unity. It just means it wasn't bipartisan. I prefer these things to be bipartisan because I'm trying to generate some consensus and take sort of the, how can I say it, the vitriol out of all of this. Because I'm confident from my discussions. There are a number of Republicans who know we have to do something about food
insecurity. I'm frustrated by the double standard of this unity thing. Like, you know, if he really wants to put most popular legislative goals as one of the pillars of unity, like he said he'd veto Medicare for all. He doesn't really support as robust of a Green New Deal climate legislation as is supported by a majority of people. I understand what he's saying there, but it's not consistent. It's more just like, what is the center acceptable to the center of power in Washington is more of the guiding principle than what he's talking about in terms of polling what the majority of the American people want.
Without a doubt.
Real.
Without a doubt. And adding on to that, there is, I do think he is sincere about the performative aspects of it. We should all,
well, thank God.
We should all look as if we are getting along and we should tone down. Now, I don't think it's a bad idea to not have our president, or I should say, I don't want to use a double negative here. I don't think it's a bad idea to have our president not be renowned for talking about how well endowed his opponents are.
Or how not well endowed his
or their lack of endowments.
Right.
I do think that's probably an upgrade for the country. I think that's pretty important. I think, you know, it's a good baseline. But honestly, let's be clear on who dropped that baseline. You know, and
why he was able to drop that baseline. Why was there a president who didn't unify the country, who divided the country? Like, it was because of many of these lackadaisical attitudes about wielding power that Biden is now exemplifying and proudly returning to.
And I think, you know, like, look, and I can understand people will say, you know, give the guy a little time. It's only been 5.5 days.
That's not my style.
It's not your style. And I think, look, you know, I contend that we will know more within 45 days. And we will get a good sense of where this is going. But I think it's also, there's a very good argument that he needs pressure and people should be at full attention as to what the president is doing and how they're reacting to the Republicans who, you know, listen, I mean, if somebody wants to bet me on what the Republicans are going to do, I'm willing to take that bet, unless they want the obstruct side, then maybe I think we probably won't be betting. But if someone wants to bet me that the Republicans are going to come sincerely and follow this, I mean, I'm sorry. It's just absurd. Well, let's move into impeachment. And I'll tell you why. Right. Because here we have 20 days ago, they had to usher out the vice president of the United States from the Senate chambers, Republican, because there was an insurrection that was inspired, if not directly abetted, by the president of the United States. They came into the Capitol building shouting that they wanted to hang the vice president.
And there were gallows erected outside of the Capitol building.
Right. It wasn't that spontaneous of an idea. And there were lawmakers, and it subsequently come out that there were multiple, at least, members of the House, and it almost goes without saying, women of color in the House who were targeted, had received death threats from individuals who were in this insurrection.
Specifically, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, that just came out yesterday.
Yes, and others. And yet, we're now seeing things when we start to see the vote tally that is beginning to form, whether there are even Republicans who are open to the idea of impeachment. We are starting to see Republicans who are saying, well... maybe not. And there was a quote in here that I just found stunning because
while you search for that, do you want me to just say, like, so Trump is basically holding these senators hostage, really, because he floated the idea of a third party to the press, the Patriot Party. And that doesn't seem like it'll probably go anywhere. But the threat of it is freaking Republicans out enough because that could really jeopardize them. And he's also now saying, you know, carrot and stick. Well, maybe if you vote to impeach me, I'm going to back a primary challenge against you. And so the tones are shifting a bit.
The tones are totally shifting. And here is Shelley Moore Capito. She is the Republican senator from West Virginia. A lot of people made strong statements, and I put myself in the category of what the president's role was, particularly right after January 6th happened, right? So they're ushered into safe rooms, in quotation, in the Capitol building during the insurrection, and people said some pretty harsh statements about the causality involved in that insurrection. And she goes on to say, in the disappointment and shock. And I suppose as time goes on, the political considerations begin to weigh in. In other words, yes, on January 6th, late in the day, on January 7th, maybe even as late as January 8th, maybe 9th and 10th, we were thinking, oh, some of us were almost hung, literally hung. Some of us could have died. In fact, a Capitol policeman was killed. Others were killed in the course of trying to scale the walls of the Capitol building or rush in. There was nooses. There were zip tie handcuff restraints. There could have been other weapons. And we thought, huh, maybe someone should have to be responsible for this. And then a whole couple of weeks go by, almost 3 weeks go by.
Healing, if you will. A time for healing or forgetting.
Right. Or forgetting or realizing that, wait a second, what's really important is whether we get reelected. And the point being is that if it only takes 2 weeks from when your life has been threatened that inspired you to hold the former president of the United States accountable, if it only takes 2 weeks for you to get past your own personal safety, you're literally seconds away from potentially having seen the Vice President of the United States led away for his own hanging. If you can get past that in 2 weeks so that you don't hold the president accountable or the former president accountable anymore, how far down the road do you think you're going to get with Joe Biden's calls for unity to pass something legislatively if their constituents, for whatever reason, don't want to do it, which of course they won't because it's Joe Biden, and a significant percentage of these people think that Joe Biden is going to, I don't know, whatever, change the flag of the United States into the Antifa flag. And I don't even know what is there an Antifa? I don't think so.
Well, it's not an organization, so I don't think there's a flag. I mean, maybe these Republican senators just have great therapists. They got over it within 2 weeks.
That's very, very quick.
Yeah. I mean, the congressional health care plan, we all know, is quite generous. But yeah, I mean, obviously, I agree with you. And they're terrified of the Trump primary voter. But I'll go out on a limb and say they might be a little overestimating Trump's power here. Like, now that he's been deplatformed, some of the air's been let out of the balloon here. He doesn't have a megaphone in the way he did before to just dictate things.
I think the real test to that, and I think there, without a doubt, he certainly, I mean, you know, I think there is, we're all coming down, not we're all, but I think a significant portion of the country is coming down from like a sort of like a heightened state of anxiety and stress.
I've been feeling
on
that.
Some level, right?
Yeah,
like all the cortisol, is that what it is? Starts to bleed out. And wait, do we have a picture of the Antifa logo? Is that true? Well, you know, pop that up. That could be the new flag that Joe Biden is going to be. There it is.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I spoke too soon.
There you go. I think, you know, certainly the absence of him on social media has made him disappear from the forefront of our brains. And I imagine he is also laying low specifically right now to avoid providing the Republican senators any cover for doing this, for voting for him for impeachment.
Yeah.
My guess is going to be the day after the trial ends in the Senate, regardless of what they find, he is going to be back out there. And I mean, look, let's be honest. If he calls a press conference from Mar-a-Lago, the cameras are going to go down there. And now the networks may have learned their lesson, at least for a moment, and not necessarily covering it. But I think from a Republican lawmaker's perspective, if he's going to go and campaign against them, they have reason to be worried. I mean, because they have created a monster in their.
But now that he's out of power, I don't know if there's enough in it for him. I just don't know.
Oh, to do it. It would have to be like on some type.
And
of,
I
like,
don't think he has the megaphone that he's on. And I'm has had in the past, and maybe I'm being short-sighted. That's entirely possible. But that's just like the vibe I'm getting. Me checking the temperature of the room right now.
Now, it turns out Patrick Leahy is going to preside over the impeachment hearings. He is the president pro tempore. Tempore. How do you know how to pronounce that?
Tempore.
Of the Senate. And the Chief Justice of the United States does not have to do it. He's only obligated to essentially preside over the impeachment of a sitting president. Mm-hmm. And there is some talk amongst the Republicans that in the event that Donald Trump gets convicted, that they're going to try and take it to the Supreme Court to see if it's constitutional that a former president can be impeached. My understanding is it's always been more or less settled that that one could be. But of course, they would try and reverse that, but only if he gets convicted. If he's not convicted, they'll save that for, I don't know, maybe they'll try and impeach Bill Clinton or maybe FDR or something to that effect. if the Republicans have control of the
time to impeach Antifa
of the Senate. But One thing that we should note, they brought over one article of impeachment, and that was the inciting of this insurrection. And part of it'll be interesting to see how much of what has been revealed just in the past couple of days will be part of the argument that the House managers will make as to why Donald Trump should be prosecuted. There have been some amazing stories that have come out of Donald Trump's attempts, you know, the most obvious attempts to change the outcome of the election were the 60 odd cases that they brought around the country that were all, I think, but one. And the one that they won was insignificant. Not just summarily dismissed by judges. In some instances, the cases went a little deeper into it, but more or less ended when the judge would turn to Rudy Giuliani or whoever was the litigator in any specific case and say, well, where is the existence of fraud here? Are you alleging fraud? And when the answer was invariably no, because there was none, these cases were dismissed. So that was one attempt that Donald Trump had in changing the outcome of the election. The final one we saw on January 6th, which was when the House and Senate was to certify the election. But those turned out to be bookends of a whole series of moves that the president engaged in to attempt to overthrow the election. There are at least three or four others off the top, you know, that we can mention here. Right now, Politico reports that the Justice Department's internal watchdog announced yesterday that it has launched an investigation as to whether top officials at the department engaged in any impropriety in connection with challenges to the results of last year's presidential race. There was, reported by the Washington Post earlier this month, that the DOJ's Inspector General would examine the abrupt resignation of the U.S. attorney in Atlanta, a guy named B.J. Pack. And this was... We now know, and much of this was foiled, I think, because Raffensperger released the audio of his phone call with Donald Trump. And we know that Lindsey Graham pressured Raffensperger, who is the Secretary of State of Atlanta, of Georgia, to find other places where maybe the votes could go the other way. We've listened to the conversation of Donald Trump going like, this is a good thing for you to do. I'm not telling you to do it, but you know you should.
30-minute rant at Raffensperger.
It was very mobby talky in that we're talking around stuff. We're talking to the side of it. Good things could happen for you. Bad things could happen for you if it doesn't happen. I'm not saying I would do it. I'm just saying it. You know, there are reasons, et cetera, et cetera. And then we know that at least the DOJ's IG is investigating why the U.S. attorney from Atlanta, the federal attorney, the extension, essentially, the Department of Justice in Atlanta, why they resigned so abruptly and in such a weird time. And there is a belief, it's being investigated, that perhaps Donald Trump was pressuring this guy to find examples of voter fraud. People may remember back in 2004 and 5, Karl Rove led a systemic firing of U.S. attorneys who also would not find or prosecute people for voter fraud. There was a couple that resigned. There were a couple that were fired because they would not bring any cases. And then, in addition to these two calls by Graham and Trump to pressure Raffensperger, in addition to the abrupt resignation of the U.S. attorney in Atlanta, there was a report in the New York Times Friday, just a couple of days ago now, that Trump was trying to team up with the acting head of the Department of Justice's Civil Division, guy named Jeffrey Clark, to have the department urge Republican Georgia legislatures to block the state's certification of Joe Biden's win there. And supposedly this plot included the requirement, perhaps, to pull it off, that they fire the then acting Attorney General Jeffrey Rosen and replace him with this guy Clark from the Civil Division. And it wasn't until many of their aides, apparently, involved in the department, the DOJ, threatened to resign en masse, that it didn't happen. Although it's also possible, again, that the Raffensperger call short-circuited this attempt. I mean, so we have a relentless sort of campaign by Donald Trump to overthrow, overturn the election results. Some people argue that this is, you know, the system worked. But I don't think the system worked. I think there was a couple of people in there who did stuff. You know, it is not part of the system that the Secretary of State leaks an audio call from the President of the United States leaning on him to change the election results. That just happens like by happenstance. It just so happens that Raffensperger was fed up at that point.
And we were we're lucky that he was concerned so much about his own legal culpability that he chose to record it. I mean, there were no checks and balances if Raffensperger didn't do this, because Georgia is from top to bottom, now in terms of the governorship and the powers that be there, controlled by Republicans. They were entirely susceptible to this kind of corruption. Even if Georgia had been overturned, obviously, Biden still would have won. But it just goes to show how paper thin these things are. And like the fact that we just have these arbitrary state officials involved in certifying elections. I mean, in 2000, it was those three obscure Miami board members who were in charge of determining the recount. It's just so convoluted. It's so susceptible to corruption. And at the same time, we laud ourselves as the greatest democracy in the world.
All right. That trial is going to start in the Senate probably in about within 2 weeks. And so we will be keeping you updated on that. I imagine we are going to start to hear Republicans now sort of preening and posturing. I don't even think they're going to pretend that they're going to listen to the evidence, because they can't. Because, I mean, look, we know what the evidence is.
Yeah.
It all happened in broad daylight. And we know, I mean, there's not much to be revealed here. Although I guess, you know, these reports are going to be brought up. It really is just going to be, and impeachment is a political process. But in this instance, you're not even going to have the Republicans feign that they're going to listen to the case. All right, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, got a couple of other stories to race through. A lot of stuff happening these days. We'll be right back after this. A couple of notable points. Janet Yellen yesterday was confirmed as the Secretary of the Treasury. She was formerly chair of the Fed. She was 84 to 15 was the vote. Yellen is the third of Joe Biden's nominees to be confirmed. Avril Haines, the Director of National Intelligence, and Lloyd Austin, who received a waiver because he was recently in the military, is now Secretary of Defense.
Immense hypocrisy there.
There's hypocrisy, and it's sort of, I mean, honestly, can we really not find a Secretary of Defense?
There were 15 Democrats, including the squad in the House, who voted against granting him the waiver, and I'm not sure what the vote was in the Senate, but there's legitimate concerns about the crossover between our military personnel and the intelligence community. And a lot of these Democrats were totally fine blocking the waiver when it came to the Trump appointment, when he tried to do it. So
right. And I mean, look at what we just went through in terms of the idea of, you know, we had, there was a, for whatever reason, although I don't think it's completely arbitrary, you had all the living Secretary of Defense having to write a letter in the days before that insurrection to a public letter, essentially to the military, saying like, hey, not a good idea for the military to get involved in, in anything political. And, you know, when we rely on the individuals, whether it's the president of the United States or whether it's a specific Secretary of Defense, when we rely on individuals, we are in very, very shaky territory, because as we can see, you could have the presidency held by Joe Biden and or Barack Obama at one moment, and the next moment it's Donald Trump. And so you cannot rely on individuals. That's why rules like this exist. There, the idea of a waiver should be under extraordinary circumstances. And I'm sorry, like, there is no reason that we can't find a Secretary of Defense that is not has not been in the military recently. But so Janet Yellen, the first Treasury Secretary, who is a woman, Joe Biden will be appointing Nurse Susan Orsega to serve as the nation's acting Surgeon General. He dismissed the Surgeon General in the first couple of days. I can't imagine why, based upon, you know, anybody complicit with Donald Trump's sort of COVID denial. This is also interesting and very encouraging. You'll recall that on day one, Joe Biden fired the National Labor Relations Board general counsel. He refused to resign. Biden fired him. This guy, Rob, was essentially a union buster, and his job was to function as the filter as to what cases made it to the five-member National Labor Relations Board. He has been replaced by the National Labor Relations Board regional director, a guy named Peter Orr. I think I'm pronouncing his name correctly. And this is just an acting replacement. We'll see. Hopefully, I think the Senate will confirm, or maybe not. But he's an acting replacement. We just went through an administration with seemingly
all acting,
you know, administrative members. But Peter Orr was the regional director who found that college athletes are employees with the right to unionize. So this is someone who is clearly a proponent of workers' rights and of empowering unions. And that is very...
which is huge, because college athletes don't get paid, despite making millions upon millions.
Huge for college athletes. But now this guy's in a position to usher in...
Yes.
Lastly, just this story. Pfizer, we've told you the story about how Pfizer ships vials of COVID vaccine. And it is standard practice when you're filling up these vials of COVID of any type of vaccine or anything, I think, that's injectable, to have like a 10% margin of error, maybe a little bit more, 15, 20% margin of error in the bottles. You need a special type of syringe, however, that can fit into the vial and still get stuff in there because the needle's so long and this and that. Well, it was found that vials that were shipped for five doses ended up could get six with those special syringes. And now Pfizer wants retroactive credit for those extra money. Doses because it's extra money. I say the U.S. government should basically expropriate this vaccine. We need it for national security purposes.
Sorry, Pfizer. You may not get some extra billions.
And they are basically, the FDA now has agreed to change Pfizer's vial labels to acknowledge they contain six doses, not five, even though there's a huge number of distributors that cannot get that sixth vial dose. All right, folks, that's it for us today. We will see you tomorrow. And for those of you sticking around, we see you right now. You can join us in the fun half by becoming a member. Go to jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, don't forget, Hunt a Killer. It's the murder mystery subscription box. That's the most exciting date night you can do at home. Or it's a, you know, date night from afar on Zoom. Or it doesn't even have to be a date. But great Valentine's Day gift, in my estimation. Hunt to Killer brings people together by challenging them to decode ciphers, examine clues, solve puzzles. Like we said before, it's like an escape room delivered right to your door. Nobody's going to an escape room these days.
No, nope, but I do like escape rooms, so I'm thinking about this.
Right now, you can go to hunttokiller.com/majority. Use promo code MAJORITY for 20% off your first box. Again, make sure to use the code MAJORITY for a 20% discount. Who do we have on? Well, Nomi can tell you who she has on her program today. Oh, here she is. In the meantime, don't forget to check out The Antifada. You can find it at twitch.tv/TheAntifada. Nomi, you there? There she is.
Hello.
Hi. What's the story? Who's on your program today?
We have Kenzo Shibata, and we have Lance from the Turfs. Oh, my gosh. And who else do we have on our show today? I know I'm embarrassed to say that. I think those are our guests today. That's the big show. So we're gonna have a good conversation about the potential strike in Chicago, the teacher's strike, but it looks like it's probably gonna happen. And then we're gonna talk about, you know, just the news of the day, which we're not gonna talk about here. Goes unsaid. I'll just leave that.
Well, there you go. We will see. So check that out. You're on Twitch now too, right?
Yeah, we're on Twitch. I should say that. We joined Twitch maybe like a month ago. So thanks to everybody who's watching us on Twitch. I promised I would learn a game and play one.
Oh, really? All right.
I'm going to have an addiction, guys. It's not about that. I'm not an anti-gamer. Problem is when I get into this stuff, I don't get out of it. Like, I have to go to some sort of, like, specialty set, like, place to...
That same problem during the break. I played a Red Dead Redemption, and I just, like, did not leave my chair in my living room.
I think I, like... Yeah,
that's what I want to do.
I had a Sims addiction growing up. Like, it would be the summertime, and I'd just sit in my house and play Sims for 8 hours, not eat, drink water. Not good.
I love Sims. We had an old Frogger game. Like, I know that's really old-fashioned, but I went through a solid year where I played that during every...
So what is
break I had?
Twitch.tv.
The underscore
Nomiki underscore
yeah.
Show.
Sure.
Show.
Yep, that's it.
Very catchy. Very catchy URL. Matt, what's happening on the underscore Matt underscore Leck underscore media universe?
Today I want to plug the new episode of Literary Hangover on the Secret Diary of William Byrd II. We talk about the year 1709, so Queen Anne, and him being a plantation owner and enslaver, and talks about the way he treats his pregnant wife and his servants. He didn't expect this diary to be public, so it's very truthful, and we go in depth at it. So check that out, patreon.com/literaryhangover.
What kind of person writes a diary and doesn't expect it to become public?
He wrote it in a shorthand code, actually. It's all sort of like, so he could either write memoirs later or have legal sort of backup of what he was doing and that sort of stuff.
Interesting.
But he also talks about like, oh, I saw a beautiful woman at church. So it's interesting.
That's my worst nightmare. Guys,
he deserves having his privacy. He's a pretty bad guy. I mean, as you can imagine, of a aristocratic slave owner in Virginia.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to head into the fun half. 646-257-3920 is the number. See you there. Left is best. Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude. You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
the good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd,
don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance. My first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jab.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good. Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. I want to just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me,
hey, shut up.
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.